Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Living Better in San Diego, a public service presentation of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. I'm Gary Lee. The San Diego Center for Children is a leader in children's behavioral health care, serving children and families throughout San Diego County. At the San Diego Center for Children, they promote the health and well-being of the whole person and the safety of their environment. Joining us this morning is San Diego Center for Children President and CEO, Dr. Moises Barone, and Senior Director of Philanthropy, Allison Beck. Welcome, Moises. Welcome, Allison.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good to see the both of you again. It's been a couple of years, I think. Allison, at least 2 years,
yes,
I think.
Yes.
And Moises, at least a year or so.
Well, we're very happy to be back.
Pleasure to have the both of you back. Let's start from the beginning. Moises, how about a little background info and history about the San Diego Center for Children?
Happy to do so. The San Diego Center for Children is the oldest nonprofit serving the needs of children and youth in our community. Actually, this year we're celebrating 131 years of providing services in our community. And we really focus on the needs of children and youth and families with mental, emotional, and behavioral disorders. And we have a range of programs to be able to respond to those needs. We have 8 facilities throughout the county, and we have 355 staff members that have great skills, great passion, that touch the lives of about 1,000 people every single day.
And what's the mission at the San Diego Center for Children?
The mission of the center is to protect the joy of childhood, prevent emotional suffering, and to incite change.
Now, you work a lot with foster kids. Is it just foster kids?
No. Actually, we really work with a wide range of populations. We really definitely provide needs, and we have expertise working with foster youths that have been exposed to trauma. So about 25% of the population that we work with will be in child welfare care. There will be foster youth. But we really see folks and families from all walks of life. Some of the referrals come to us to school districts. Some of them come because they need the help we provide, even if they don't have the resources to pay for that. We have the opportunity to be able to benefit them as well. And families also with health insurance, private insurance, or Medicare, Medi-Cal that need services will come to us. So we really try to create pathways for families from all walks of life to be able to access our services.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, the center is the oldest children's nonprofit in the region, accredited by the Joint Commission for its excellence in quality of care. How does that work for you? I mean, that's got to be a great recognition there.
Yeah, no, we're very proud of that. Actually, we have a multidisciplinary staff of clinicians and educators and support staff, and everybody really approaches the work from a trauma-informed lens, a culturally informed lens. And we really strive for excellence. We believe that that's really the level of service that the population that we work with deserves. So all of our clinical services are really accredited by the Joint Commission, which is a national level of accreditation of excellence that really speaks to the quality of what we do. And on the educational side, our non-public school, the Academy, is accredited by WASC, which is the Western Association for Schools and Colleges.
Now, you mentioned you have several program sites. You have 8 program sites, right?
That's correct. Actually, we have a presence throughout the whole county in the north, the east, the south, and central San Diego. We have a range of programs to be able to appropriately respond to the needs of families and youth in need. So it ranges from outpatient clinic that we have the Family Wellness Center, which is located in East San Diego, where families really can come if they have questions, concerns about their child's functioning or mental health challenges or educational challenges, and we'll be able to work with them and help them. We also have a number of programs in coordination with and collaboration with the County of San Diego, where we send teams of professionals to families' homes to be able to work with them and support them, our wraparound program. We also have a program, as we were talking about that before, to work with all the youth that are placed in foster family agencies. We do that throughout the whole county. And we also have a residential treatment facility for those youth that have more significant challenges, more significant problems. Maybe they're at risk of hurting themselves or others or require a higher level of care. We have that facility, our main campus in Linda Vista.
And I want to talk about those programs in a little more depth here in just a minute. Now, the program sites, are the programs then different for each particular site, depending on the needs?
Absolutely. So some of our programs are countywide. For example, our wraparound program that we're talking about, where the team of professionals goes into families' homes, that will be countywide. The services that we provide to foster family agencies and the youth that are placed with them is countywide. Some of our programs will be more centralized or regional, where families can really easily access them. So we're here to really serve people from all walks of life and from all over the county in the best way we can.
I read some staggering statistics the other day. 1 in 5 children in San Diego are struggling with a mental, emotional, or behavioral disorder. That works out to be 105,000 children and teens in San Diego County who are struggling, and also that 50% of mental health problems arise by the age of 14. How do we prevent this? How do we bring those numbers down?
You know, I'm so glad you bring that up, because I think we really need to raise awareness in our community. You're absolutely correct that all the data suggests that about 20% of children and youth will experience a mental, emotional, behavioral disorder. Some of the most common ones that people are aware of will be depression, will be anxiety, post-trauma conditions, behavioral problems, learning problems, and also developmental challenges. Actually, a lot of people don't realize that about 25 to 30% of visits to pediatrician have to do with this type of problems. So it's pervasive and it's significant. What concerns greatly is the fact that maybe because of a lack of awareness or realization, or because of not knowing exactly what to do or how to respond with these issues, about 80% of these youth that are being experiencing these challenges are not getting the help they need. And that's something that we need to change as a community, because all the data clearly indicates that early identification of these problems and earlier intervention can really help change the course of the problems. So the sooner a family is able to identify these challenges and be able to get the appropriate level of care, which we are one of the important resources in the community, the better the chances that things will be moving in the right direction, that it will be possible to intervene to help these youth achieve their true potential and to be able to help families cope and deal with this.
So what are some of the signs of mental health issues or behavioral issues?
That's a very important question, because for many children, some of these challenges are going to manifest themselves through behaviors. Many children, especially the younger they are not going to be able to articulate or be able to communicate through words what they might be experiencing. The kinds of things that it will be important for educators, for parents and the community in general to be aware of is changes in behavior. For example, a child that is not eating as they used to, or not sleeping as they were able to do before, any changes in level of function, they were doing well in school and now they're not doing well in school, any kind of learning challenges or difficulties, feeling withdrawal. Also, if there are concerns about the behavior that are not developmentally appropriate, like outbursts, aggressive behavior or impulsive behavior, when parents are observing behaviors that they feel that developmentally is not what you would expect, it might be a good idea to have a conversation, might be a good idea to get a consultation just to ensure that we're not dealing with a more significant challenge. And with a professional, it would be possible to do an assessment to identify what kind of challenges may be existing that require attention. And the last thing to mention is that if families are concerned about what's happening at home, too many arguments, difficulties, child not behaving, that may be an indicator of something happening. Or if the child is not performing at school educationally the way that a family thinks they should, that may be something also to pay attention to.
And are the signs that much different between kids and adults?
You know, with adults, you can observe some of these challenges, but for adults, it will be possible to be able to communicate some of the things and be able to identify some of the emotions and challenges that they may be experiencing. So a child that is experiencing fear, for example, may not be able to articulate that as clearly, but it manifests itself in behavior or avoidant behavior. They may not want to go places or do certain things. So it is important to look at the behavior. So it is important to look about what a child is doing and how they're responding to different situations. And then with the appropriate interventions, it might be possible to help them articulate or be able to verbalize what their concerns may be and then be able to work with that.
So what kind of assessment do you do at the center then to determine a child's mental state?
We're really fortunate to have a team of professionals, multidisciplinary team of professionals from pretty much all disciplines in mental health and education. So when a youth is referred to us, what we try to do is really get all the available information to be able to identify what is the history, the developmental history, what is the pattern of behavior challenges that they may be experiencing or learning difficulties. We then try to identify if we need to complement the information that already exists with some of the kind of comprehensive assessment that may involve psychological testing, psychoeducational evaluations, or some other type of developmental evaluations. And we take all that information to be able to really get a better idea of what is underlying the difficulties or the challenges that are being exhibited. And that helps us in turn articulate or develop a treatment plan, a plan of action that in coordination with the family we're going to put in place to try to help that child get better and reach his or her full potential.
Tell us about your Empowered Families methodology. This is something that was created by the center, right?
Absolutely, and I appreciate you bringing that up. We're keenly aware that at the end of the day, families are the ones that are becoming aware of these challenges, and families are the ones that are being entrusted with the responsibility of identifying the resources that they would like to access or they feel that they need to access to be able to help their child. For many families, it's very difficult to know what to do, where to go. Some of them may not know exactly how to access the service, or they may have difficulties knowing how to be able to do so. So what we try to do is, thinking from a family-centered perspective, we develop a methodology that when a family comes to us, not only we're going to do a comprehensive assessment of the needs of that child, but we're also going to do an assessment of the needs of that family. We're going to look at what kind of education they need, what kind of skills they need to develop, and how to be able to provide it. We're going to be able to also have conversations to identify what's happening within the family, what's happening with all the siblings, what's happening with the parents, and identify also what kind of resources in the community they may need and what's happening with the community. So we have developed a proprietary assessment process that allows us to look at all of these dimensions, and our goal is that not only every child will get an appropriate treatment plan, but every family will get what we call a family action plan that is going to have the education, the skill development, the recommendations, the advocacy, the supports, the referrals that they may need to be successful in all aspects of functioning.
So you're not just treating the child, you're treating the family as a whole.
Very important, and I really think that that's an important component to address. We are concerned that sometimes an individual-centered approach can be limiting. Yes, it's important to look at the needs of the child if he or she is experiencing some symptoms or a syndrome that requires intervention, to be able to use the best possible interventions to be able to help them. But most children live in a family. Most children are being taken care of by a family, whatever that configuration may be. And we need to make sure that we understand what's happening with that family and that we provide the appropriate supports to that family to be successful, to feel empowered, to be able to help themselves and help their child. Because as a society, we're entrusting that family with the care of that child, and we need to make sure that they get the appropriate resources, the knowledge, and the support to be able to do that. So that's what we're trying to accomplish. And for that reason, we developed this kind of standardized approach or methodology that it's allowing us to do that. And we're finding good results. We're finding that families feel more empowered, that parental stress is decreasing, and also that they feel that they have better coping abilities to be able to take care of these challenges.
I think it's also important to mention that, of course, a child's mental health doesn't just affect the child, but those around him or her.
That's an important point to make, because it's really a back and forth. It's really a two-way street. On the one hand, if there's challenges that the parents or the family is experiencing, it's going to impact the well-being of the child. At the same time, the challenges that a child may be experiencing may impact the well-being of a family. So it's very important to look at it from both perspectives. It's important to look what's happening with the parents, with siblings, or with the child themselves. And if you want to be really effective, you need to be addressing these things in a comprehensive way, in an integrated way.
Now, another one of your services or programs is therapeutic support to foster youth living in foster family agency homes and their families. Tell us about that.
Yes, as we were talking a little bit before, we really specialize in being able to work with youth that have been exposed to trauma, and as a result of that are experiencing all kinds of challenges in pretty much all aspects of functioning. So if a youth is removed from their home and they're being placed in a foster family agency with foster parents to get that level of support, we have the expertise of working in coordination with that agency and with the foster family to be able to provide the appropriate therapeutic support to ensure that that youth hopefully is able to get the services and the opportunities they need to be able to initiate a process of healing and to be able to reach their full potential.
And you mentioned also earlier that you do have short-term residential program.
That's correct. Actually, we are the first facility in our county to receive the new license by the state of a short-term residential treatment facility. So it's a residential program that it's geared to be able to help or address the needs of youth that are experiencing more significant challenges in terms of behavior or safety for themselves or others. So youth will come to us. They will be living with us for a period of time that could be from weeks to maybe a few months, depending on their needs. And then we also incorporate the family. We want to be able to make sure that the family develops the resources, the know-how of how to be able to best help their youth. And our team works with the youth to be able to address whatever is underlying the challenges that they're experiencing, help them learn how to self-regulate the behavior, how to develop coping abilities so that they can return to a home environment as soon as can be, and to be successful in being able to do so. And our program really is significant because it helps prevent multiple hospitalizations or more significant challenges or difficulties. I mean, suicidal ideation and suicide attempts are the second leading problem with our youth, and suicide, completed suicide, are the second leading cause of death with our youth. So it's important to pay attention to these things and provide the appropriate level of care when that's needed.
Now, is there a cost for your services?
Yes. Actually, there's a number of ways that the families can come to us. For example, in our residential program, some of our referrals come from the programs with the County of San Diego, like child welfare, if the youth is in that system of care or probation. We also, if it's determined through individualized educational programs, special education programs in the public schools, that our residential program may be the best course of action for a youth, a recommendation can be made. So we receive a number of referrals from school districts. And we also work with most private insurances here in San Diego. So when a family is experiencing those challenges and there is a sense that we can be a good response for them, we definitely can work with their private insurance. Some of our other services, like our outpatient programs, we really are providing a number of different pathways for families to come to us. If they have Medi-Cal, which is the state's Medicaid program, we might be able to see them that way. If they meet criteria to be able to access public health service funds, we would be able to do that as well because we have partnerships with the County of San Diego. And if they don't have resources, we don't want them to not seek help. We will work with them. We have reduced fees, and we will try to do our best to be able to support and help them.
Now, you had a big event yesterday. It was your Rise Up event. And this is an annual thing you do, right?
We have an anniversary celebration each year, and this year was our 131st anniversary celebration at Humphreys by the Bay, featuring a Grammy-nominated artist, Andra Day, San Diego's own wonderful musician, and just an extraordinary event that, yes, we do year over year and raise critical funds to help the programs that Moises was speaking about to better serve the youth and families in San Diego.
So the money raised, it doesn't go into any one particular service or program?
It really diversifies across all of our programs to ensure that we all have the resources that we need to better provide these types of programs and maybe fill some of the areas that are not covered perhaps by some of the funding sources Moises mentioned. There's so many other needs and that are so important and so critical to the delivery of service and level of excellence that he was speaking about aren't all covered by some of those funding sources. So the community and philanthropy really helps to build upon that and enhance what we can provide to these children and families who are really working to overcome some pretty significant challenges in their life.
So this event is held right around the same time every year?
Yes. We typically have this in the spring, springtime, and then we have another event in the winter time, San Diego's winter time, in December, where we invite the community to be a part of our Wacky Wonky Wonderland. And this is a lot more of an in-kind donation drive, as well as raising funds to help provide through sponsorships or individual gifts. It's an event held on our campus, our main campus, 12 acres in Linda Vista. And we have a big festival, a pretty big party where we invite families and the community to come and bring a gift, a donation in kind or a cash gift to support the San Diego Center for Children in December.
I think I remember that from last year.
Yes, yeah. It's a fun, wacky time.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes.
Now, aside from these events, do you have any other events throughout the year or just these
kind
two
of
major ones?
Those are our two major signature fundraising events and, of course, events for smaller groups, and also welcome individuals to visit our campus if there's interest in learning more about the services that we provide, getting to meet some of the staff, and just seeing, again, the main campus in Linda Vista. We welcome visitors that are scheduled in advance, and welcome to reach out to us at centerforchildren.org to schedule some time to learn more and connect with us through a visit, a personal visit to the campus.
So aside from these events, these fundraising events, where else do you get your funding?
Through philanthropy, we have extraordinary support through individuals, great amount of annual giving. We have wonderful corporate sponsorships and grantors that provide funding through us throughout the year annually. Also wonderful foundations that support the San Diego Center for Children, maybe specific projects or programs that are of interest to them, both individuals and foundations in that case.
And volunteers?
And absolutely.
Volunteers are any nonprofit.
Yes. We actually have quite a bit, quite a range of volunteer opportunities. Everything from kind of our more volunteer leadership. Our board of trustees serves a magnificent role in our volunteerism, our board committees, and even those that wish to volunteer in our programs. We have some specific needs throughout the year, different process of getting through and, background checked and approved for work with our kiddos. But we also do our events throughout the year. As I mentioned, we have volunteer needs during those times of year. And then, of course, just throughout the holidays, it tends to be a pretty heightened need for some needs for volunteerism as well.
And mm-hmm. if somebody wants to volunteer in one of your programs, is there a training that goes along with that?
It depends on which program they're going to be interested in. If there's interest, we do keep our website updated with those types of needs in our program. Maybe it is a person to work in our academy, working alongside our teachers, our art program, music. If someone has a particular skill or talent or something they wish to share, with our kids, that is something we do try to find a match for within our programs. And if that is identified and we can schedule that in some of the curriculum that happens within the program, we will work with you or the volunteer to, again, go through a background check and go through the same level of a little bit more of an extended volunteer application. But we definitely have placement for a number of volunteers in program.
And something that I wanted to mention also, because something that we've seen in the last year or so, which has been really wonderful, is it feels to me like a partnership with the community where we have groups of people mm-hmm. that come to our campus and they really help us beautify or remodel or revitalize one of the areas or therapy rooms or playrooms in our 12-acre facility. So obviously, as you can imagine, the upkeep of the facility is important, and it becomes really a wonderful opportunity for groups of people that are interested in giving of their time to be able to partner with us to do something meaningful that could have a lasting effect, and that is just frequently a great surprise to the youth that we work with, and it's just a win-win situation.
What he's speaking of is our Joymakers program, and those are more on the website as well at centerforchildren.org, and we keep that updated through campus projects or particular programs that need an extra lift and that volunteers can be involved, whether through a direct service project or perhaps even helping do a little bit of fundraising to support the that service project. But our Joymakers program is updated throughout the year and welcome inquiries to seeing if there might be a match with individuals, small groups, or even larger groups that we've worked with 50 plus.
Now you mentioned with your the winter fundraiser, in-kind donations. What kind of in-kind donations do you look for?
So specifically around the holiday time, we tend to get a lot of gifts for the holidays that we might be able to give out to children and families that might not be able to afford, those types of holiday gifts. But we also are able to bring in games and sports equipment and arts and crafts and journals and fun hair and makeup supplies. Our kids love those types of gifts. We actually will use some of the games in some of our therapeutic programs. Our academy and residential program use tons of art supplies as we incorporate that as a part of our therapeutic tool. We also will see lots of backpack drives around the beginning of the school year. So those are all welcome. We can always find a match for something around the holiday time. Another need that we see is food, gift baskets of food, gift cards to a Vons or a Ralph's or even Costco, Walmart, Target, that can help a family that really is not only struggling with some mental health challenges, but also financially struggling. And during the holiday time it can get pretty expensive and feel pretty overwhelming, especially quite disappointing if you aren't able to do something special for your kids during the holiday. And we want to provide those same advantages that a lot of other families might have access to during the holidays.
But you do take in-kind donations then throughout the year.
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yes.
We're just about out of time. Moises, if somebody is listening this morning that might think their child is having some behavioral problems, what's your advice?
I would say that if you have any questions, any concerns, don't delay. All the data is very, very clear. All the research is very clear that the earlier a problem can be identified and the earlier the intervention can be put in place, the better the outcome is going to be. So I would encourage parents, I would encourage communities, family members, teachers, that when they observe or they see behaviors of concern or they hear things being articulated by a child or a youth thinking that their life is not worth living, that they are upset, that they are withdrawn, that they feel that they don't have a future, to take that very seriously and to really reach out and seek some help. If they don't know where to start, we encourage them to go to our website, www.centerforchildren.org. They're going to get a lot of information there in terms of also what to look for and then access to a range of options and resources that will help them hopefully get the match of what they need. But if they have any questions, we encourage them to call us because the sooner, again, the intervention can begin, the better the chances of it working and having a lasting effect.
And Allison, if somebody wants to make a donation to help you with your mission, can they do that at your website?
Absolutely, would welcome that and appreciate that at www.centerforchildren.org. There's a donate button from the homepage, more information about our programs and what that gift would help support, as well as other opportunities to give to throughout the year.
And are you on social media?
Absolutely. We are on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. I can't think of the other one right now, but we do are quite active on social media. Facebook is probably our most engaged audience. Welcome people to find us on any of those. And all those links are on the website as well.
So they can go straight
Instagram.
From the website.
Instagram is the one. I'm not the millennial. So that's the other one. Yes.
All right. Moises and Allison, a pleasure seeing the both of you
Thank you.
And having you on the show again. And thanks for all you do at the San Diego Center for Children. It's great service and it's greatly appreciated.
Appreciate that.
Thank you so very much. Good to see you again.
That concludes another edition of Living Better in San Diego. The opinions expressed on Living Better in San Diego do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of the Entercom San Diego radio stations. Episodes of Living Better in San Diego are available on the station's website. Join me next week when my guest will be from Big Brothers Big Sisters of San Diego County. Until then, I'm Gary Lee. Have a great week.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.